Don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Cryptoconomy Quick Read. All right, welcome back to the Cryptoconomy Podcast, everybody. I got one today that I am a little shocked I haven't done yet, actually, because this is an awesome one to me, and I love the concept, and it really hits home kind of the revolutionary nature of the change in computing that's happening with Bitcoin and these similar styles of protocols. And it's, of course, by the extraordinary Nick Szabo. And since we had just heard a history lesson about him and BitGold, which you haven't, if you have not listened to it, I definitely encourage you to check that one out. It's part four of Aaron Von Wertheim's Genesis Files. So it's episode 111. And it's with BitGold, Nick Szabo was inches from inventing Bitcoin. So now that we've heard that one, I actually went through, like, checked three different ways. I did a search by title and then just by Szabo to make sure I hadn't covered this one, because I really thought I did and am surprised that it's taken me this long to get to it. But we are going to read his December 2014 article on the Unenumerated blog. That's unenumerated.blogspot.com. And we'll go ahead and just jump right in. And it is titled, The Dawn of Trustworthy Computing. When we currently use a smartphone or a laptop on a cell network or the internet, the other end of these interactions typically run on other solo computers, such as web servers. Practically all of these machines have architectures that were designed to be controlled by a single person or a hierarchy of people who know and trust each other. From the point of view of a remote web or app user, these architectures are based on full trust in an unknown root administrator who can control everything that happens on the server. They can read, alter, delete, or block any data on that computer at will. Even data sent encrypted over a network is eventually unencrypted and ends up on a computer controlled in this total way. With current web services, we are fully trusting. In other words, we are fully vulnerable to the computer, or more specifically, the people who have access to that computer, both insiders and hackers, to faithfully execute our orders, secure our payments, and so on. If somebody on the other end wants to ignore or falsify what you've instructed the web server to do, no strong security is stopping them. Only fallible and expensive human institutions, which often stop at national borders. The high vulnerability we have to web servers stands in sharp contrast to traditional commercial protocols, such as ticket selling at a movie theater, that distribute a transaction so that no employee can steal money or resources undetected. There is no root administrator at a movie theater who can pocket your cash undetected. Because, unlike a web server, these traditional protocols, called financial controls, can securely handle cash, you didn't have to fill out a form to see a movie, shop for groceries, or conduct most other kinds of everyday commerce. You just plunked down some coin and took your stuff or your seat. Imperfect and slow as these processes often are, or were, these analog or paper-based institutions often provided security, financial control, and/or verifiability of fiduciary transactions in many ways far superior to what is possible on web servers, at much less hassle and privacy loss to the customers. On the internet, instead of securely and reliably handing over cash and getting our goods or services, or at least a ticket, we have to fill out forms and make ourselves vulnerable to identity theft in order to participate in e-commerce, and it often is very difficult to prohibitive to conduct many kinds of commerce, even purely online kinds, across borders and other trust boundaries. Today's computers are not very trustworthy. but they are so astronomically faster than humans at so many important tasks that we use them heavily anyway. We reap the tremendous benefits of computers and public networks at large cost of identity fraud and other increasingly disastrous attacks. Recently developed and developing technology, often called the blockchain, is starting to change this. A blockchain computer is a virtual computer, a computer in the cloud, shared across many traditional computers and protected by cryptography and consensus technology. A Turing-complete blockchain with large state gives us this shared computer. Earlier efforts included state machine replication. See list of papers linked below. QuixCoin is a recent and Ethereum is a current project that has implemented such a scheme. These blockchain computers will allow us to put the most crucial parts of our online protocols on a far more reliable and secure footing, and make possible fiduciary interactions that we previously dared not do on a global network. Much as pocket calculators pioneered an early era of limited personal computing before the dawn of the general purpose personal computer, Bitcoin has pioneered the field of trustworthy computing with a partial blockchain computer. Bitcoin has implemented a currency in which someone in Zimbabwe can pay somebody in Albania without any dependence on local institutions, and can do a number of other interesting trust-minimized operations, including multiple signature authority. But the limits of Bitcoin's language and its tiny memory mean it can't be used for most other fiduciary applications, the most obvious example being risk pools that share collateral across a pool of financial instruments. A blockchain computer, in sharp contrast to a web server, is shared across many such traditional computers controlled by dozens to thousands of people. By its very design, each computer checks each other's work, and thus a blockchain computer reliably and securely executes our instructions up to the security limits of blockchain technology, which is known formally as anonymous and probabilistic Byzantine consensus, sometimes also called Nakamoto consensus. The most famous security limit is the much-discussed 51% attack. We won't discuss this limit of the underlying technology further here, other than saying that the oft-used word trustless is exaggerated shorthand for the more accurate mouthful trust minimized, which I will use here. Trust, used in this context, means the need to trust remote strangers, and thus be vulnerable to them. Trust minimized code means you can trust the code without trusting the owners of any particular remote computer. A smartphone user in Albania can use the blockchain to interact with a computer controlled by someone in Zimbabwe, and they don't have to know or trust each other in any way, nor do they need to depend on the institutions of either's countries for the underlying blockchain computer to run its code securely and reliably. Regardless of where any of the computers or the owners are, the blockchain computer they share will execute as reliably and securely as consensus technology allows, up to the aforementioned limits. This is an extremely high level of reliability and a very high level of security compared to web server technology. Instead of the cashier and ticket ripper of the movie theater, the blockchain consists of thousands of computers that can process digital tickets, money, and many other fiduciary objects in digital form. Think of thousands of robots wearing green eye shades, all checking each other's accounting. Individually, the robots, or their owners, are not very trustworthy, but collectively, coordinated by mathematics, they produce results of high reliability and security. Often blockchain proponents talk about the, quote, decentralized blockchain versus the, quote, centralized web or centralized institutions. It's actually the protocol, Nakamoto consensus, which is highly distributed, combined with strong cryptography, rather than just decentralization per se, that is the source of the far higher reliability and much lower vulnerability of blockchains. The cryptography provides an unforgeable chain of evidence for all transactions and other data uploaded to the blockchain. Many other decentralized or peer-to-peer technologies do not provide anything close to the security and reliability provided by a blockchain protected by full Byzantine or Nakamoto consensus and cryptographic hash chains, but deceptively style themselves as blockchains or cryptocurrency. A big drawback is that our online and distributed blockchain computer is much slower and more costly than a web server. By one very rough estimate, about 10,000 times slower and more costly, or about the same as it costs to run a program on a normal computer in 1985. For this reason, we only run on the blockchain that portion of an application that needs to be the most reliable and secure, what I call fiduciary code. Since the cost of human, or wet, problems caused by the unreliability and insecurity of web servers running fiduciary code are often far higher than the extra hardware needed to run blockchain code, when web server reliability and security fall short, as it often does for fiduciary computations such as payments and financial contracts, it will often make more sense to run that code on the blockchain than to run it less reliably and securely on a web server. Even better, the blockchain makes possible new fiduciary-intensive applications, such as posting raw money itself to the internet, securely and reliably accessible anywhere on the globe, apps that we would never dare do with a web server. What kinds of fiduciary code can we run? We are still thinking up new applications, and the categories will be in flux. But a very productive approach is to think of fiduciary applications by analogy to traditional legal code that governs traditional fiduciary institutions. Fiduciary code will often execute some of the functions traditionally thought of as the role of commercial law or security, but with software that securely and reliably spans the globe regardless of traditional jurisdiction. Thus, property titles. Registered assets, where the on-chain registry is either the legally official registry for off-chain assets or controls on-chain ones, thus providing reliable and secure custody of them. One can think of a cryptocurrency such as Bitcoin as property titles, or at least custody enforced by the blockchain consensus protocol, to bits recognized as being a fixed portion of a currency, or as controlling unforgeably costly bits, or both. Blockchains could also control hardware, which controls the function of and access to physical property. Smart contracts. Here, users, typically two of them, agree via user interface to execute blockchain code, which may include transfer of money and other chain-titled assets at various times or under various conditions, transfer and verification of other kinds of information, and other combinations of wet or traditional off-chain and dry on-chain performance. A blockchain can hold cryptocurrency as collateral, like an escrow, which incentivizes off-chain performance that can be verified on-chain by the parties or by third parties. A full blockchain computer can pool on-chain assets into a single chain-controlled risk pool spread among many similar financial contracts, reducing the amount of collateral that needs to be stored on-chain while minimizing the need for off-chain collateral calls. The blockchain can also make the search, negotiation, and verification phases of contracting more reliable and secure. With on-chain smart contracts, we will be able to buy and sell many online services and financial instruments by button and slider instead of by laboriously filling out forms that disclose our private information. On-chain treasuries, trusts, and similar, where money lives on the blockchain and is controlled by multiple signature or multi-sig authority. Putting a treasury with signature authority on a blockchain computer is low-hanging fruit, but is often tied to more speculative efforts under the label, quote, distributed autonomous organization, or a DAO, which may include voting shares and other mechanisms to control the treasury, like a corporation or other kind of organization. I hope to discuss these blockchain applications, especially smart contracts, in future posts. While there is much futurism in many blockchain discussions, including many trying to solve problems that aren't actually solved by the blockchain, I will generally stick to low-hanging fruit that could be usefully implemented on QuixCoin, Ethereum, or similar technology in the near future, often interfacing to still necessary parts of traditional protocols and institutions rather than trying to reinvent and replace them in whole. All right. And he also references, here's a list of basic computer science papers describing the technology of blockchains. If you've not explored his blog, definitely check out unenumerated.blogspot.com. I really love that one because it really hits at the heart of how a quote-unquote blockchain computer or a set of distributed computers running and revalidating the entire network's work creates a system of trustless, or as he refers to it, trust-minimized cooperative exchange. There were a couple of points he mentions that I wanted to hit, because this was done in 2014. So it's really interesting that he mentions Ethereum and QuixCoin, and I don't really know anything about QuixCoin. This is the only time I've ever even heard of it, I think, unless I just heard about it and forgotten. But also mentions Ethereum. But one thing that he specifically stated was that by its design, each computer checks each other's work, and thus a blockchain computer reliably and securely executes our instructions up to the security limits of blockchain technology, which is known formally as anonymous and probabilistic Byzantine consensus, also called Nakamoto consensus. But that lays out so cleanly the security principles that it is a wall or a network of validation where everyone is checking everyone else's work and is therefore directly proportional to the number of people participating in that validation. And if users are not able to independently validate, it's moving back into a system of trust, slowly but surely. And it may be only done so incrementally, but it's exactly what seems to be going on with Ethereum, is that it's getting a larger and larger group of, or network of light nodes, and fewer fully validating archival nodes. Which is kind of threatening the entire security model, basically from the top or from the bottom up. It is risking or trading its trustworthy computing nature and widespread, like, distributed validation in an effort to try and be the application layer and core communication layer all in the same thing, just all on the same blockchain. And I think, because he mentions specifically the limits of Bitcoin's language and the small memory allocation of Bitcoin and Bitcoin blocks for complex or more application-specific fiduciary uses. I think he... Where is that? He mentions, like, risk pools that share collateral across a pool of financial instruments. And I think we see this changing by turning it into a layered system. You can do so much more with the underlying protocol and extend the base validation into more complex trees, sidechains, and layers of actual applications that don't constantly burden this huge blockchain computer that has, you know, roughly, as he says, 10,000 times slower and more costly computation to do simple contracts and validation. And because of that, trying to make it a full application layer is, I think, threatening the very usefulness of it as a means to trustlessly run applications. As he states, it only makes sense to run that portion of the application that needs the most reliability and security. So the more trivial the code you allow onto the underlying network or the underlying blockchain computer, the the greater the consequences of pushing out and or reducing the reliability of the most important and vulnerable fiduciary applications that in certain situations, particularly across borders and in the face of tyrannical government opposition or censorship, deeply need that security and reliability. And trading that completely unique and revolutionary utility for, you know, CryptoKitties is a seriously debatable trade-off, particularly if it seems to threaten the longevity of the underlying chain. And we have yet to see kind of the full consequences of this, and there are a lot of people working on it. There are so many Ethereum developers, and I hope it can work out its issues and basically get its validation back into a place of security and reliability. But I'm getting more and more concerned the more I read about it and kind of watch their GitHub for syncing problems and the fact that you cannot find reliable data on how many fully validating nodes there are versus light nodes is a little concerning in and of itself. But this really hits one of the key principles that makes these distributed networks such a huge advantage and shift from the underlying security assumptions of the basic web server, which is arguably one of the least secure and most highly trusted financial environments that you can be in, which is why the internet has so quickly grown into this giant web of security holes and identity theft. I mean, billions and billions of dollars are spent just trying to resecure people's finances and mitigate the damage of tens of millions of accounts being leaked almost yearly, just out there because of the massive vulnerability of these centralized institutions. But the speed of the economy is so necessary and everything happens so quickly now that that cost is actually, it does not outweigh the benefits achieved by using the internet for commerce, despite the complete lack of security and the worsening of the trust situation that, you know, leads to spying, mass data collection, like complete loss of privacy. What we have become used to in regards to privacy online is almost an embarrassment. And the fact that it's almost kind of considered the assumption now that, okay, of course the government or some company somewhere is going to be seeing every single thing I do and every website I go to and every other computer and device that I have and who my friends are and who I'm talking to and what we're saying and what pictures we send each other. And I mean, just the, it really has become 1984 in the full sense of the narrative. The only difference being we individually paid for all the cameras and microphones and devices that are completely obliterating our privacy and opening us to huge attack vectors and systems of control. So enter blockchain and Bitcoin and digital currencies. Hopefully, at least it looks like technology is taking us to a place where we can rebuild those walls and the default assumptions of privacy and individual sovereignty that I think puts us on a sustainable path moving forward and builds us a new foundation of liberty, personal liberty, and privacy in the era of the internet, which simply has not existed up to this point. And it is really an incredible thing to see where this technology has already taken us, what discussions it's starting, the development work and the the incredible and sudden surge of importance and recognition of cryptography in the broader economy. I mean, it's just starting. Crypto Twitter is a set of discussions that no one would ever have thought were mainstream or even remotely debatable topics. They were just basic assumptions that no one had ever questioned. And this technology is truly turning things on its head, and I think has made us as a society or as a community aware of things that would never be at first obvious or transparent in any way. It's gotten the fish to ask what it means to be wet. And I think that's a really just utterly fascinating thing. So we will close here. I hope you guys enjoyed that work from Nick Szabo, The Dawn of Trustworthy Computing. If you get an opportunity, please check out his blog. Follow him on Twitter, obviously, at Nick Szabo. That's S-Z-A-B-O, 4, I think, is his tag. Nick Szabo. Yeah, Nick Szabo 4. I, of course, will, you know, link to his blog and tag him in the post, so you can make it really easy to get to. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter and Medium as well. I'm at The Cryptoeconomy. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and share it with all of your friends. And be sure not to miss, we have some exciting stuff coming up. Got a couple of crypto chats lined up with some really cool people. Stay tuned. We've always got stuff coming out. And if you would like to help support the show in any way, obviously you can share and review the podcast on iTunes, which is a huge help. But you can also purchase your Trezor if you don't have one. Get the best hardware wallet through my affiliate link. It is the one that I absolutely love and swear by. If you are securing anything more than a few hundred dollars or more in crypto, whether it be Bitcoin, Ethereum, or a whole list of ERC-20 tokens, Trezor is the way to go. And you can get through my affiliate link, and it sends a couple of dollars to help out the show if you purchase through my affiliate. But of course, if you already have your hardware wallet, just plug that sucker in and send a couple of bucks to my Bitcoin donation address if you would like to help pay for some of the servers and the time it takes to get all this stuff together. I just got a donation the other day of, I think it was like $5, and I super appreciate it, guys. Thank you so much for the help. I guess that will close us. So, thanks for listening, guys, to the Cryptoeconomy podcast. Don't miss the next shows we got coming up, and I will catch you tomorrow. Take it easy, everybody. We'll be right back.